I want for him to be able to feel open to be able to come to me. I want for him to be able to understand that dad got your back. Dad and mom got your back, no matter what.
Welcome to The Art of Fatherhood, a podcast that takes you on the journey of fatherhood. Now here's your host, Art Eddy.
This week's The Art of Fatherhood podcast is being brought to you by RPACT. RPACT is the one app every parent needs to keep their children safe when online and teach them healthy digital habits. With RPACT, it is a breakthrough parental control app that harnesses the power of the internet and application blocking in order to teach children proper device use and responsibility. It is the most comprehensive parental control app and family locator, and it's perfect for family of any size. RPACT is easy to use, easy to set up, and great for parents and families who are concerned with their children's overuse of technology. Whether you're introducing a device to your child for the first time or simply have a teenager who spends way too much time on social media, RPACT is the perfect parental control app solution for your family. For more information and download the RPACT app, go to their website at rpact.com. And make sure you check out my interview with Michelle Havner from RPACT as we talk about her parenthood journey as well as great ways that you can keep your kids safe while they grow up in this digital age. What is going on, everybody? Art Eddy here for the Art of Fatherhood podcast online. I'm very happy to have Bernard Pollock Jr. Thanks for taking the time, sir. How you doing?
I'm well. How you doing?
Doing really well, man. I appreciate the time. I know you're a busy guy. We're going to talk about football, a little bit of NASCAR, maybe podcasting as well. And then, of course, we're going to finish off with the Fatherhood Quick Five. But I want to bring you on and talk about fatherhood, man. So when you found out you're going to be a dad, what was going through your mind, sir?
Oh, my gosh. it was don't mess this up. I think for me, I'll be real. The relationship I had with my father wasn't there. So, you know, I look at, you know, now we have four kids. But I look at that when I knew I was having a son. I knew what was going down, you know, as far as when he was going to be born and all this other stuff. I was just like, I want to be able to have a better relationship with him than I have with my father. I want for him to be able to feel open, to be able to come to me. I want for him to be able to understand that dad got your back. Dad and mom got your back, no matter what. That was just one of the coolest things, I think, for me. It was awesome. And I tell, he laughed at me still to this day. And I'm like, dude, I think you're the only, like, the only time I've about fainted was when my son was being born. And it was just seeing everything. And I mean, yeah. I about fell out, but it was one of the proudest moments of my life. Truly a blessing. And I thank God all the time for it.
I appreciate you sharing that story, sir. And the fact that, you know, you saw the relationship or the relationship you wanted with your dad and you're like, nope, the relationship my dad had with me, we're flipping the script, we're going to change it up, and I'm going to be there for my kids. I love that. That is something you learned from your dad, and it was obviously benefited your kids. So just kind of flip the script on this. What is something your kids have taught you about yourself or about life in general that you wouldn't mind sharing with me?
So I think one of the biggest things, Art, with me, what my kids have taught me, I'm more like my father than I thought.
Okay.
And so, you know, I don't know if you've ever faced this, but for me, I grew up and I'm like, I don't want to be like my, like, I want to be some parts like my dad, but I don't want to be, you know, a lot of parts like him, right? And so I grow up and I say that every day, I don't want to be like my dad, I don't want to be like my dad. And I'm finding out as, you know, both my daughters, when, you know, a couple of times they've come in there like, dad, like, we just didn't know if we can come to you and say this because we felt like you were going to, like, blow up on us or whatever, or be this. And I mean, and that hit me. And I'm just like, you know, like, that's exactly what I didn't want as a father. I didn't want my children to not come to me. Most men will be a little bit more harder around the edges than, you know,
rough, right?
Moms. Right. We're going to be a little rougher around the edges. But for me, that hit me. And so, you know, I wanted them to be able to get a chance to be able to come without me cutting them off. And I noticed when I went to go do it one time, I noticed that I was just like, okay, no, that's not who I want to be. That's not who I want my kids to grow up seeing. And I don't want them to be like that to their kids. So let me let them finish. Let me let them hear it out, you know, and no one understand if they did do anything that was going to make us angry or whatever, it's already done. Right. Like, now, how can we fix it? And so, you know, and I'm still learning. Yeah. Still that at 36 years old with four kids, 13, 11, 8, and 5. I'm learning that.
God bless you.
And yes, man. So it's crazy.
But again, the fact that I think now more than ever, our generation of I'm 42, right? And I have two daughters, 13 and 11. And so I'm kind of in the same, you know, spectrum with the ages and all that. And there's certain things where, like you said, like, I don't want to be like my parents. And like, there are good parts of my parents, don't get me wrong. And there's certain things, but then like, you're like, wow, I'm acting like my parents. Or even beyond that, like, there are certain things like, why am I fighting about this? I should just let it be. Like, they should not like win the battle, but I'm like, they should just win this. It doesn't matter if I say this or that. Stupid things. But then you kind of like, they'll talk to you and they'll be like, I really wish you would have said this instead of that. I'm like, all right, cool. So the fact that you guys have open communication just like we do here in our house, I think that is huge, because maybe when we were growing up, we didn't have that communication. We didn't understand. I'd be like, hey, girls, this is why I said that and you didn't respond. So I don't know where you're at. When you're ready to talk to me and when you're ready to like see, like you're going to explain your angle, then we can kind of meet halfway, right? So I love the fact that you're doing that and having that with your kids. And that is such a great role model for your kids, because think about, they're going to be like, oh, I remember, they'll be like, I want to be like my dad, right?
Right. That's it right there.
Love it, man. And of course, playing in the NFL, doing the stuff that you're doing after your career, hard work, determination, those are core values that I know you're going to instill in them. Talk about some of the other ones, sir.
I think that's the biggest thing. And it's funny because, you know, all of our kids play sports. And my oldest son is 13. He plays football, wrestles, and plays basketball. Our daughter, 11-year-old, my wife played volleyball. So she's kind of following in my wife's footsteps. Nice. She plays volleyball. And then our 8-year-old, she plays softball. She's in the karate and plays basketball. She's not really getting into volleyball. Yeah. And our youngest son, he's the baseball player and soccer player. So he's going to be our track guy.
So year round, you guys are always doing something, right?
Bro, we are Uber drivers and literally at Dick's Sporting Goods. I was at Dick's Sporting Goods the other week. I literally went there every day of the week. The employees were laughing at me because they're like, you've been here every day. I'm looking like, I know. Just let me check out and leave. I'll be back tomorrow. So that's
next time they see, like, here's your shirt.
Exactly.
Your tag, right?
Exactly, man. But that's what it is. It's just like, you know, learning that with the kids, doing that with the kids, understanding who they are. I mean, it's so awesome for me as a father. And I mean, to go back to where, like you said, like the open communication, that's what it is. We have to have that in our house. They have to be open. They have to trust. I think that they have to trust that mom and dad is going to take this information and I'm safe. They're safe and they're going to take care of us. But I look at, you know, growing up in the life, you know, that my kids, they didn't grow up like me. They didn't grow up like my wife. You know, we live in the suburbs. Like, you know, they're not missing the meal. They're not, you know, begging and missing anything on clothing, shoes and things of that nature. My son's 13. So he's kind of starting to understand fashion a little bit now. So he wants, you know, like, dad, like those Jordans come out here in 2 weeks. I'm looking like, yeah, buddy, they do. And you ain't getting them. Like, you know, or if you do get them, like, you go work for it. And so it's just like that it's just so different from how I came up, you know, that I got to instill in them. Like, no, you going to work. When, you know, we have a weight room in our house. I'm like, yo, like I tell my daughter, I'm like, yo, babe, you got to learn how to go attack the net as a volleyball player. We got boxes downstairs in the weight room. Go jump. I tell my son all the time. And it's finally starting to click with him where he's like, okay, dad, I see what you're saying about me lifting weights. We don't have to be crazy in a weight room, but you need to lift. You need to understand your body is strong. You need to feed your body to go out here and produce on the field. So that means you got to work for it. Nothing is given to us. We got to go out there and take everything, whether it's the field, the wrestling mat, the basketball court, the tennis court, the volleyball court, whatever it may be, instilling that in them. And I think that's the hardest part, because they didn't come up like myself and my wife. So it's almost like they expect it. And it's just like, no. You can expect it all day long, but expect me to tell you better work.
Love it. And the fact, like, so the shoes and the Jordans, I'm a sneakerhead, right? And I remember, yeah, I got clowned because I was wearing Voight sneakers back in the day, like middle school. And they were like the cheapo versions of the Larry Bird and Magic Johnson Converse, right?
Yeah.
And basketball. And everyone stopped because everybody's wearing, at the time, You weren't wearing Air Jordans if you were a kid. You were wearing Sky Jordans, right?
Uh-huh.
So between fifth and sixth grade, I was mowing lawns. I was washing people's cars. I wanted the Bo Jackson SC trainers, like the Auburn colorway.
Yeah.
My parents were like, we're only spending this amount of money for you. You got to do the rest. I did the rest. I took the care of those shoes like nobody's business. I put it back in the box, clean them and all that stuff. So my daughters too, like we have them an allowance. We give them an allowance each week for the chores that they do. Mm-hmm. Some of it goes into their savings and some of it, you know, they get to spend, but they realize like I can spend something like on $5 a piece of crap. And then all of a sudden, like I want to, if I save some money, I can actually get something I want. Right. So I think we're doing the same way. You got to put in the work and there's got to be effort and then you will reap the reward. So Bernard, I love everything that you're doing right there. And
yeah, man,
you're in the thick of it, sir. So what is one big piece of advice you'd offer to new dads? I mean, a lot of things you're saying, communication and the hard work and what you're, you know, teaching them is great, but what is one big piece of advice you'd like to offer to them?
I think the biggest thing where so many fathers get lost, and I've been there and I have to snap out of it and remind myself, be present. Like we can be there and not present. And my wife reminds me of this all the time. You know, like she had to get on me Sunday. I just got back from Daytona, me and my son. And I get back and I got everything, you know, was getting stuff done. And I came and got my office. The family's all in the living room. And I came to my office to get some work done to try to figure some stuff out. And she was just like, Bernard, come out with us. She's like, if you're going to do that, come out here with us and do it. You know what I mean? And when they're babies, it's awesome. It's beautiful to be able to hold a kid and love him or her and, you know, do all this other stuff. And then as they get older, you figure out, okay, that they're a little bit independent. So they're kind of going playing on their own, doing whatever. They don't really need mommy and daddy, especially for our kids. They're getting older. And, you know, like you could test like 13 and 11, like they don't want to hang out with friends and do all that other stuff. But it's just like, you know, be present. You know, take that time and have those movie nights. I enjoy movie nights with my kids like no other. Like me and my wife, we get up, we sit in the corner of the couch, they come up and surround us, even at 13, 11, 8, 5. And I mean, that's just the awesome part, you know, to be able to just kind of kick it with them. And you know, my youngest girl, oh my gosh, she's my cuddler. Like she cuddles with me. My 11-year-old, she won't really come cuddle with me, but my 8-year-old, she'll come cuddle and, you know, and just, that's just, I will just say that, man, because we can be there and not be there. And that's not helping the kids, especially our girls, man. Our girls need that father figure. They need a man to show, they need that example for a man to show them how a man's supposed to love his wife and then love his daughters, because that's what they're going to expect from any boy to man that comes into their lives. You know, I want my daughters to want a man like their father, a dude that's going to protect them if anything comes up against them. My daughters them know, my sons them know, my wife them know, I will fight till I'm dead to cover my family. You know, if you come in my house, you leaving with lead, if you even leave, you know what I'm saying? Or you go leave with some bruises, some, you know, and that's just how it is. Yep. But I'm going to protect, I'm going to provide. And, you know, that's just what I believe a man is supposed to do for his home, cover his home and cover his children and his wife. So yeah, I would just say, be present, man. Be present as much as possible.
Everything you said, I agree 100%. And I'll be, and if any parents like, oh, I've always been there, you're kind of lying. You got to be honest with yourself. There are times like, especially now, we got phones, we got all of these things where even during family, we love family movie night too. If we've seen the movie, the kids want to watch it again. Like we were like showing them the 80s and 90s movies. And I'm like, I've seen Ferris Bueller like 3 times already this summer. And then I'm on my iPad and it's just like, am I being present? Right. And you got to kick yourself in the butt and be like, hey, be there. Because you see all these like, oh my, I can't believe my daughter and my son's in high school. And then someone's like 4 years, they're gonna be in college. And like, don't remind me. So it's going to go back that so quick. So be present. I love it, man. Big fan of the NFL, big fan of your time in the league too. So when you went from Purdue to the NFL, and I love asking this question because everyone has a different answer. What was like the biggest hurdle or biggest transition for you?
I think for me, Art, it had to be knowing when practice and everything was over in the National Football League, everyone was going home to their families or to their house. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
In college, man, we went back to the dorms. We went back to, you know, our dated Wiley Hall. Well, we was Wiley, our freshman year, to the dorms, and then Hilltop Apartments, where the entire football team, the basketball team, everybody was there, right? Like, you know, when I got to the league, I was just like, oh man, like we have practice, everybody here kicking it. And then when we left, like, I'm like, oh, okay, now I got to go home to a house I had to buy, where me and my wife, when she was my girlfriend at the time, but we lived there. And it was just like, okay, I'm not, that camaraderie and everything else that you had in college was just, it wasn't there anymore. And, you know, I just remember talking to one of my teammates in Kansas City. And I was like, dude, like, this is so weird. He was like, Bernard, everybody got families. He was like, this is a job. He was like, dude's got kids, dude's got wives, dude's got girlfriends. Like, they trying to kick it with them. They ain't trying to kick with us anymore. When we at the facility, we talk, we laugh, whatever. But when we gone, we gone. Like, they want to detach from what we were just doing. And I think that was the biggest hurdle for me. Like, the football stuff is football. Like, learning the plays, that's football. But the biggest obstacle, I think, for a lot of guys where they just don't understand, this is a job now. People take this serious, because if you in there playing around, and it's not, you know, the NFL has changed a lot since I played, but guys took it serious. They took, when we in this meeting room, you need to have pen, notepad, and you better be taking notes, because when we get out there on that field, you can't be messing up, because if you mess up, that means, if they look at me and think it was me, then that's my job. You know what I mean? Or if we all not performing, they're going to clean house. And if they clean house, I'm out of a job. And if I'm up in age, like, nobody else going to pick me up. You know what I mean? So that was one of the biggest things, that was getting over that hump and understanding that it was a job. It was no longer, we're at school, going to class together, at the dorms, at the Hilltop apartments together. You know, that was the biggest adjustment.
Appreciate that. Yeah, another unique answer. Thank you very much for sharing that. And I'm a Niners fan, so this question is going to be a little tough and hurting for me. But
I'm sorry to hear that, Art. I'm sorry.
Super Bowl 47, man. Lights went out like that. So I remember watching the game, and you guys were killing the Niners, and I'm like, all right, this is this. And then the lights went out, and someone's like, Art, did you go to, you know, New Orleans and pull out the lights? Like, if you see someone with a backwards hat and some Jordans with some plugs, you know that it's that dude. It's my buddy. What a weird Super Bowl in the sense of, like, just like, you guys were on such a high, and then, like, the lights went out, and it's like, all right, and then you guys started playing. What was your emotions through that whole game? Because, I mean, it had to be like a roller coaster, right?
Well, it was so – the crazy part about that game, for me, I had been dealing with – I had 6 broken ribs the entire season. And on the first play of the game, I re-broke them. They were starting to heal, and I just re-injured them. I had to go back in to get – I had to get my whole left side numb. So they went and just start shooting up my left side to numb it, so I didn't feel it anymore. So that was a hurdle within itself, because they started to heal when the playoffs started. I took the last game off and to get started for the playoffs, so they were feeling a little bit better. I still was padded up and everything, still was taking numbing shots. But to start that Super Bowl, it was just, you know, that run, first and foremost, to get to the Super Bowl was amazing. You know, I think we all knew after we had our players-only meeting, and then, you know, coaches ended up coming in and talking. I mean, it was just one of the biggest things that I think we knew and understood. We all understood that we're going to the Super Bowl. We're going to win the Super Bowl. And just everything throughout the playoffs, getting into that game, it was they had nothing for us. The 49ers had nothing for us as far as, you know, what they were doing. They attacked some things, and I still have not gone public about this. And I'm still a little bit angry, because I've never been able to celebrate the Super Bowl like I've wanted to. But, you know, they attacked a couple things, and so we had to adjust. And that was a little annoying. But when the lights went out, you know, as I tell a lot of people with that, we were beating their tail. They had to find a way to cool us down. I truly believe this was done on purpose, first and foremost. It was done on purpose. So I'm not even going to hold that back. Because when the lights went out, when we were on the field, whoever cut the lights, they didn't cut the lights in the entire stadium. So some of the lights were still on in certain parts of the stadium. And then all of a sudden, we all sit there like, wait a minute. And then you just start seeing other lights go out. And then a light would come back on, and then it'll go back out. And so we all sit there like, man, hold on. So we kind of just stretching, talking on the ground and you know, going through stretches. And we're just like, man, like, let's go. This is adversity. Let's go. We got to get through it. And obviously it worked in their favor, because it cooled us down, and the 49ers made a run. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, while you're still upset, you know, you guys lost. And
I appreciate that. Cause I mean, you know, I think the biggest thing, especially now with social media, and, you know, athletes have a bigger voice and they can tell their side of the story. I think that's the biggest thing. And also too, you mentioned earlier with you and your wife, where you grew up compared to what your kids have grown up. A lot of people, especially in the past few years, where people like, what do you mean it's different for other people in America and all this other stuff? Right. Everyone's starting to hear a voice and everyone's starting to be like, oh, I didn't know that, right? Maybe it was just you didn't take the time or whatever the case may be. But hearing that story for you about the Super Bowl, like I wasn't there. I just remember watching it. I'm like, I guess I even said to my father-in-law and my wife, I was like, this is the only way that the 49ers, I think, can stop the Ravens. And that's why people are making the jokes on social media about me. Like, if you see, you know, dude in Jordans and a backwards hat taking out the lights. But appreciate you sharing that. But also, just a side note, for you with you know, the pain medication, that kind of wears off. So did that, the lights and all that kind of mess that up with you as well or no?
No. So once they start sticking and numbing, I mean, that literally lasts. I remember one game, I got shot up 8 to 10 times on my left side, and I was numb for the rest of the game, and it went until about Tuesday morning I started to feel my left side again. Yeah. So, you know, that, you know, is it safe? Probably not, you know, but, you know, I wasn't going to miss the Super Bowl, and I wouldn't change it, you know, I wouldn't change it for anything, you know. This is what we sign up for. We know and understand, you know, injuries are going to happen, things are going to break, things are going to tear. That's the nature of the business. And for me, you know, I've dealt with that pain, and I tell people a lot of times, you know, everybody has a pain tolerance. You know, some people can have it, some people don't. But I think, you know, with this game, because we've been conditioned so much that, okay, if you're on the sideline, you can't help the team. If you can't help the team and you're on the sideline, that means we're going to cut you or we can get rid of you at some point. And so NFL players are just conditioned to play through pain. And our pain, you may see how we're performing and be like, oh, they don't hurt. No, they hurt. We hurt. You know, it hurts to go out there and compete and perform every single day and then put it all together for Thursday or Saturday, Sunday or Monday. Those things hurt. But I think, you know, like I said, once again, we're conditioned to do it. You know, once again, I wouldn't change it for the world.
Nice, man. Two more questions. So done with the NFL, awesome career. Now you're kind of getting into coaching and podcasting and all that stuff. Talk about like the podcast, the Pollard to Pollard, man. Talk a little bit about that.
So that's kind of crazy. So, you know, coaching is what I love. And I tell people all the time, God has blessed me with, you know, with a unique ability to be able to play this game, right? So I played this game. That was my talent. My gift is coaching. And I'm not sitting there saying every NFL player or every former NFL player or every current NFL player will be a coach. But, you know, I was the player where I paid attention to everything. I was my own agent. I did my own contracts. I knew and understood how to work. I watched the GMs. I watched the owners. I watched the trainers. I watched the coaches. I watched the players. I watched the drills. I watched everything. I was a leader and a captain on every team I played on. And I wanted to know, and I still got all of my tablets. My family hate when I call them tablets, but my Trapper Keepers paper, where I just got notes from my rookie year because I wanted to learn and digest all of that because I just wanted to know, right? So, you know, when I coach, you know, I have players that fly to Nashville to come get trained by me, DBs, linebackers. We're doing all of that stuff. And so I love being able to teach them ball. I don't believe in just sending an athlete out on the football field that's not equipped to be able to play the game of football and expecting him to play the game of football. No, I didn't equip him. You know, so I love, you know, helping players understand the game. So doing that has just truly been a blessing for me. And podcasting is, it's something that I enjoy. I love communicating. I love talking about the game. I love talking about, you know, just talking about life, whatever it may be. But my nephew, Alex Pollard, he's at Florida State right now. And he was like, hey, he was like, Unc, you want to do a podcast? And I was like, you want to do a podcast? So it's just funny, you know, because I'm not going to say he's an introvert, but he's not as outspoken as I am. I am outspoken. I am blunt with how I say things. And some people may, you know, misunderstand that. But as I tell people, I played this game. I understand this. I've been around it. I know the business. So when I talk it, I'm not going to talk it to fluff it for you. I'm going to tell you how it is. If you like it or don't like it, that's on you, but I'm telling you truth. And so, you know, the podcasting is awesome. I love being able to just communicate, to be able to provide something for families, and it's to be a unique thing where it's coming from a former player's perspective, and then a fan perspective from my nephew.
Love it. No, it's great work. And people should definitely check the Pollard to Pollard podcast. Of course, I'll put links here over at theartoffatherhood.net. How'd you get into NASCAR, man? Because here's the thing. Before I get into, basketball, football, baseball, sometimes a little bit of hockey, but, those are the sports. I did some stuff with, Crown Royal. They flew me out to, cover some, NASCAR events. Huge respect to, seeing, everything that they go through. The fact that, like you said, you're an NFL player. You're going to tell people how it was, right? And when you can, as a fan, you can be a Monday morning quarterback, Michael, you should have done this and all this other stuff. Until you know, you can give your opinion, but that's not fact, right?
Right.
But I just saw all the everything, the minor details that went into NASCAR. I was like, this is legit. And people say it's you can't turn right or something. You just got to keep on going in circles. It's like, all right, just pay attention. But how'd you get into NASCAR, man?
Dude, it's so, gosh, you about to get me, so, look, I didn't talk football. Now I'm about to get, jittery because, I'm so excited with this, you know, and Art, growing up, man, in Indiana, I'm from the hood. We didn't know anything about NASCAR. In middle school, I think I remember people wearing, some DuPont jackets. I remember my cousin and when they were in high school having DuPont. But look, as I told people before, I don't even think they knew who drove the DuPont car. And I just found out it was Jeff Gordon, right? Yeah. So it's like, stuff like that. For me, it's awesome because I didn't grow up watching it. People were telling me black people weren't involved. People were telling me all the stuff that was going on with NASCAR. And I just so happened to walk in the room at 35 years old. Walked in the room, my wife was watching CNN or something. And she was flipping through channels and ended up stopping on CNN. And Don Lemon was interviewing Bubba Wallace. So when I was like, Bubba Wallace, I was like, man, that sounds like a brother. I was like, man, so wait, is a black driver in NASCAR? So I stopped and I started watching, listening. And I was like, okay. I said, look, I need to find out about something different. I need to find out about a different sport because I play football all my life, play basketball, ran track. So I know about those other sports, but I was like, okay, I really want to learn this thing right here. And that was kind of in the middle where they were trying to, take the Confederate flag before the start of the 2020 season with COVID and all that stuff. They were trying to remove the Confederate flag and all of that. So I was just like, okay, I like the direction that they're going. Let me check it out. Let me see if it's what people say it is or if it's not. So I watched Martinsville, if I'm not mistaken. And I'm watching and I had the TV loud because I was like, I want to hear the analysts. So I was like, I need to hear what they're saying about this sport. I need to hear because I've been told there's no strategy and everything else. So as I'm listening to the analysts and I'm seeing the drivers, I'm looking at them and I'm like, man, these cats are skilled. Like they're skilled drivers relying on a machine to get the job done. Right. And then you have obviously a headset communicating with the crew chief and the spotter on what to do. So then I'm looking at, okay, they're going fast, but it's got to be a controlled speed. They can't be out of control, right? Yeah. So literally I watched that race and was hooked. And for me, and still to this day, as I tell people all the time, I fell in love that day, and I am so grateful for the sport. Now, I don't want to take away anything that has happened to black people, brown people, whatever it may have been, Hispanic people that have gone to races and have dealt with racism and things of that nature, because people have said things to me, and there's a small percentage that have said stuff, but the majority, when I say the majority of people that have listened to me and watched me watch this sport, they have been welcoming and it has just been, they have embraced me and it's been so awesome. And so, like I said, I don't want to downplay what is going on, but I know NASCAR is trying to do everything they can to, for everybody to feel included. And man, I've never been to a track because I wanted to, I tell people all the time, when I'm in, I'm all in. I didn't go to a track. I've never been to a race. I went to my first race, the Ally 400 here in Nashville. I went to an SRX race here in Nashville at the fairgrounds. I just got back from Daytona. I race. I got a rig in my office where I literally get on when it's a simulation or simulator. I race that. And dude, I'm literally hooked to this. I'm going to Talladega, Richmond, Vegas. I'll be at the championship in Arizona. Like, I'm hooked, literally hooked. And it's been a blessing because Ally, I got to shout Ally out. Ally has been amazing. Covering a 48 car with Alex Bowman. Alex is just an awesome dude. They're a phenomenal company. They're doing great things. And, you know, to be able to be a sponsor and represent their company, man, has been so cool. But they represent NASCAR, too, because NASCAR has been awesome to me. And every driver, every team, that's been so cool, man. So I'm super crunk about it. I'm trying to keep it, you know, tamed. But, yeah, I get pretty hype about
NASCAR. So I know you went to Daytona. But like, have you gotten a hot pass yet where you're actually, like, be able to, like, go down and, like, check out, like, while the race is going, ground level? Have you been there yet at all or no?
Yes, man. So I've watched – so at the Ally 400, you know, I was on pit road. I watched the race. Watch the pits. I was there.
The pits. That's what I was going to add. Like, pits are crazy, right?
Dude, they are nuts. But I mean, once again, for me to be able to see this, like, these are all former athletes, mostly former athletes, college football players that are a part of pit crews. And so these guys are stretching. I'm looking like, wait, I know that stretch. Like, I know that. And I mean, you know, and just with the positions that they play in the pit crew are similar to the positions they played on the football field. So it's like, you got the guy that fuels. Those guys tend to be or were O-linemen. You got your jack man. They were kind of your H-back, your running backs, or your linebackers maybe potentially. And you got just different guys. Like, you know, it just brought so much. And for me too, how I look at this as, you know, everybody say NASCAR is like a family sport, right? I'm like, it makes so much sense that it's literally set up for families. And, you know, whether you like, and I tell people all the time, you know, black folk get involved, brown folk get involved, you know, whatever, you know, and I know a lot of black people are hesitant because they watch it and they're like, oh, we see a lot of white people like that. We're not included. Like, no, just because you see a lot of white people, you are included. They want you to come. They just, you know, just come and check it out. Ask questions. Not everybody's going to experience the hot passes and being in the pit road or whatever, but NASCAR, they do a great job as far as letting people in fan zones and doing different things where you can see. So, yeah, man, watching them races from pit road and watching the pits live and to be able to watch these guys, men and women, work, to watch these drivers, man, the atmosphere is crazy. And I'm super, super excited about it. And like I said, I'm in love with it and I am here to stay.
Love it, man. Thank you. It's great to see the giddiness you have for that sport. I love it. And thank you very much for sharing that. Now we're going to finish off with the Fatherhood Quick Five. You mentioned family movie night. Favorite family movie right now, what is it?
Ooh, I got to go with Cruella.
Yes, yeah. I just watched that too, man. So good. Oh. Like, I was just like expecting, like, all right, we'll see how this goes. But like, we were all like watching, like, that's crazy. That's awesome, right? So,
bro, Art, the way they set that movie up, like, so I'm a movie dude. I don't watch TV. I am a movie guy. So when we go through, and my wife, oh my gosh, she hates it. Like, she's like, Bernard, watching the same movie over and over and over again. I'm looking like, that's what I do. Like, I don't want to watch TV. I want to watch movies. And so it's like every time I watch a movie, like, I tend to see something I didn't see before, right? But Cruella, for me, I was like, okay, when my daughters was like, they was like, oh, let's watch Cruella. And I was like, okay, well, I'll give it a try. I was like, I wasn't expecting anything. But the way that they set that up, bro, I was like, yo. So I've seen Cruella probably 8 to 10 times maybe. Yeah. And I started watching it again the other day. My daughter was just like, not Cruella again. And I'm like, yeah, like, let's go. So, yeah, bro, Cruella is it right now. Croods is it. I've kind of been, you know, as far as the movie for me, I've been on American Gangster with Denzel. I've kind of been back on that. I'm an action dude. Like, I love action movies. So I'm Avengers every day, all day. I got my Suicide Squad. Man, I'm watching 13 Hours. I'm watching, man, I'm in all of that, bro. So I'm a movie dude. I love watching movies. I love repeated movies. Fifth Element is my favorite movie. Nice. And so, yeah, so I'm a movie guy.
Okay. Do you have a favorite Marvel movie?
I gotta go with, I'm gonna go with the first Captain America. Okay. I'm gonna go with Captain America. And I know it's not, yeah, I gotta go with Captain America.
That's cool. No, I love it. Yeah. Mine is the third Captain America.
Civil For real? Star.
I love it, man. Because as a comic book geek and seeing, like, I love DC. Just like every time they bring in Batman, it's like you don't need to show how his parents, like everybody knows Bruce Wayne's parents died, right?
Right.
So the way they brought in Spider-Man, it was great because they were just like, yeah, my uncle, something happened. You know, they kind of glazed that. And then they brought in, Black Panther. Like the way they brought the new characters into the MCU was, I think, flawless. And it was like, and it was for a reason. Like,
right.
I'll clown on Spider-Man 3 with Tobey Maguire. Like, you had so many great villains, but you put him in and, like, it was like a mishmash. But, like,
yeah.
I love, like, I'm a big Star Wars fan. So, like, the original trilogy is my favorite. But the Captain America trilogy is right up there because, like, I love the first one. The second one was just like his buddy, like Bucky and like the relationship. Bucky. And then the third one, it was like, yeah, you had like, you know, you had your good friend in high school and college. Now you have your friend in real life, Tony Stark. And it's like, you chose out of what did you do? And it was like, you know, created the Civil War. So that I'll package that Captain America trilogy as like one whole movie, right? We can do that here, right?
Yeah, we can make it up. It's all good.
Favorite family song, or is there an artist you couldn't wait to introduce your kids to?
So I tell people all the time, I don't listen to rap. Mm-hmm. And I tell people, all, you know, if you want to listen to rap, listen to rap. I remember rap songs from when I was younger, you know, younger man as well.
Yeah.
But I had to stop listening to rap in 2008 or 2009. So I just remember I was a DMX fan. And I just remember going into games after I listened to DMX, my mindset was literally on kill. I wanted to kill. Every time I hit with this anger inside of me. And that was a way that I express everything that's happened to me in my life, playing a game of football. I express the things that I went through, and it came out through my gameplay. And I remember Pastor Rod, he was our chaplain in Baltimore. And he was just like, Bernard, he was just, you know, he had did a message on, you know, rap music. And he was just, wasn't saying it was wrong. He was like, if you want to listen to rap, he was like, that's your, you know, that's what you want to do. Cool. But he was just like, you know, understand that, you know, it's a message, you know, with any music, there's a message. And we have to watch what we're allowing in because, you know, that can go in and start to, you know, kind of create some things for us. And I grew up. Gospel. I grew up in a church, grew up gospel music my whole life. And so gospel was where my foundation is. So I've always listened to gospel, you know, my entire life. And so I'm a gospel dude. I love Smokey Norville. I love Fred Hammond. I love Dietrich Haddon. I love just, you know, Yolanda Adams. I love all of them, these artists. And so, you know, for us, we've always put, you know, gospel music in our kids' ears. Nice. Not to say that they can't listen to the rap or whatever. Obviously, if they go listen to rap, it's going to be clean. But, you know, my kids prefer gospel. Like my 13-year-old, he's a music dude. Like he loves the beats. He loves different things. And so, you know, he listens to gospel rap and he listens to some rap on, you know, some, you know, YouTube or whatever. We got to put time limits on all of their stuff. But, you know, I'm just a believer for my house, for me and my house. You know, we're, you know, our foundation is gospel music. I don't have any rap music on my phone or anything else. You know, everything is gospel. And a lot of people are like, yo, Bernard, you listen to gospel music before games? I'm looking like, heck yeah. Like, and it's weird how, you know, for that music, man, I was so appreciative of my gift, of my talent, right? I was able to play and kind of take it to a level where I'm looking like, no, I play to give God glory. I play because I've been given a talent to be able to play the game of football, you know, and I get to play. I get to perform. And that's why I tell a lot of athletes all the time, you get a chance to perform. You're not owed nothing. You're not owed nothing, man. So when you go out there in front of the fans, you put on a show. We are performers. You know, and you hear a lot of athletes or a lot of people say, I'm just not a ball player. Yeah, you're not. You have a platform. You use that platform. But at the end of the day, you better understand at the end of the day, you're a performer. Yeah. You are. Don't get that thing twisted. But you know, go put on a show every single time. And gospel music got me there, and I was able to play this game. And I had to stop cussing as well, man, because I got caught cussing Reggie Wayne out on the sideline, and the microphone caught it. It was awful. And a dad came to me with his son. He was like, "Bernard, my son loves you." He was like, "You know, I want to tell you about something he heard you say to Reggie Wayne." And so after that day, I was like, I'm done cussing on the field. I'm done. So rap music and cursing, I had to give up. Now I did, you know, I was counting them after that year, after I left Houston, and I averaged maybe 11 cuss words a game. And so I was trying to get them down, but I literally, man, like it's crazy. So yeah, the life that I live, the things that I listen to, a lot of people be shocked, but you know, that's just me. That's just, you know, what, for me and my house, that's how I choose to raise my children and do what we do.
I love it. And I think a lot more people, because like, oh, you listen to gospel. Like, I think depending on where you live in the country, gospel is huge. Like, it's one of, like, you see stations always like have like, you know, different stations will have gospel or, you know, Christian music, Catholic music, whatever the case may be. Right. And I appreciate you sharing that. And also too, like, and I get it too, because I have kids, and so I, you know, we put the Pandora station on clean, so there's nothing like, you know, whatever. But like, I think it's the biggest thing. I just kind of want to hit on that, and I appreciate that dad, you know, saying, "Hey, you know, my son heard that." But like, you gotta admit, like, you're in the heat of the game. One of the biggest things I got really ticked off at, and this was after they beat the Niners, was the Seahawks when they talked to Richard Sherman. They were like huge rivals. It was like he stopped Michael Crabtree and like Aaron Andrews interviewed him, and it's like, oh, he was so angry. I'm like, he just got done playing this game and going to the Super Bowl, like, and he had all this like pressure and like, you know, just steam and energy coming out. So like, I understand where you're coming from. Like, hey, you got to entertain people, but also too, like, I think fans, especially during like when the NBA came back, people were like throwing stuff at like players. Yeah. It's like, you don't do that. Like, don't act a fool and like respect. If you want respect, you got to respect other people as well. So I just kind of wanted to share that too, because I think a lot of people forget, like, they're watching the game, but they're not, especially on the pro level. Like you said, if you're not giving 110% and other people aren't doing that, my job be gone because of what this other person's doing. So there's right. A lot of things I feel like fans sometimes don't think about, right? That's just my two cents. Describe the perfect family vacation. Where would it be?
Ooh, I think the perfect family vacation for us, we can go to Disney every year, 3 or 4 times a year. And I mean, my kids they enjoy rides. They enjoy just having fun. But I mean, dude, like freaking Disney, man. Like, we looked to go to Disney, I think it was a couple months back. Man, that was like a $15,000 trip. And I'm looking like, man, Disney is, I'm like, I thought we were in COVID. Like, and I'm like, man, like, they try to get all of this money. But nevertheless, man, like, Disney is a lot of fun for us, because, you know, we can go to Animal Kingdom. We can, you know, get on, you know, go to all kind of rides, Universal, things of that. But my kids just enjoy it. They just enjoy being on. If my kids go to a hotel, they fun. It's fun for them. Because they're like, hey,
does it have a pool? Does the hotel have a pool? All right, cool. And look at the snacks and the vending machine. Like, just that stuff, right?
Bro, it's so much fun. But I in Disney, you know, we go and we stay at a hotel where when we come out of our room, you know, they can go right over to they got a room full of, you know, where they got people cooking and, you know, stuff set up, and the kids, they go out, they leave a room, you know, they got their own room and it's connected to ours, and they leave out and go in there and, you know, kind of food, they come in eating, or we go get them and they be in there eating. So they love that. You know, so I think Disney and then going to Florida. My brother-in-law, his family, my nephews, my niece, they live in Florida. So going out there, we'll get a house or whatever. And they just have fun being on the beach. Man, you know, I'm not a big outside person. I told people, look, I'm dark enough. You can have some of this complexion. I don't need to sit out in the sun too long, brother. But going on the rides and walking out, you know, going to different parks, we have a blast at that.
Nice. Love it. And you mentioned a bunch of tracks you're going to, but NASCAR track you really want to check out is?
So Daytona was phenomenal.
Okay.
I had a blast. It was, I mean, a 2.5 mile track, oh my gosh, speeds at almost 200 miles an hour. And you got these, oh my gosh, it was just beautiful. It was an awesome race. The drivers put on a show, 100,000 people there. That was phenomenal. I can't wait to go to Talladega. Everybody keeps telling me Talladega is just, that's the one. And so I'm excited to go to that. I'm excited to go to championship race to see what happens there. But, you know, I think Talladega is the one that I need to go to. Everybody's talking about this night race here in Tennessee that I need to go to. So, yeah, man, it's you know, I'm going to have fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to get hype and crunk about anything that I go to. And that's just me. A lot of people be like, man, Bernard, it ain't that much fun. I'm like, yeah, it is. Like, man, like, when I'm all in, I'm about to have a blast with it. Like, we're going to have fun. When we go out, we're going to have fun because, you know why? We get to be there. You know what I'm saying? Like, and we got to take advantage of that. And I even tell my players that all the time. Like, don't tell me you can't do it because I can go find somebody that can't do it.
Yeah.
You know, but when we step out at these tracks, when we step out to perform and do all this other stuff, man, go have a blast. You can have fun doing whatever. And for me, oh yeah, when I step out of these tracks, oh, I love the fans, just engaging with the fans, talking to fans, taking pictures with the fans, learning from the fans, and be, oh my gosh, dude, I have a blast.
You're like a kid at Christmas talking about NASCAR. I love it.
Oh, yeah.
And lastly, top three words you hope your kids would use to describe you as a dad, what would they be?
Ooh, man. Loving, protector, provider.
Awesome. Great three words right there. People, make sure you follow Bernard on Twitter at CrushBoy31 and check out his podcast, Pollard to Pollard. It's great. It's focused on sports, but also NASCAR, too. We talked a little bit over there a lot of time. I know you're a busy guy. Thank you so much. It's been such an honor chatting with you, and I love your take on fatherhood, and it was fun chatting about movies as well, sir.
Oh, appreciate you having me, Art.
I hope you enjoyed this week's Art of Fatherhood podcast. And if you would be so kind, please leave a review, rating, and subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts, wherever you get your podcast, please download, subscribe, and review. Really appreciate it. And also want to say a big thanks to our sponsor, RPACT. They do great things to help protect our kids when they're using tablets, smartphone, whatever the case may be. We want peace of mind, and RPACT helps bring that peace of mind when our kids are growing up in this digital age. Go to rpact.com for more information.
Thanks for listening to the Art of Fatherhood podcast. Leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and go to artoffatherhood.net.